Welcome to Luxury News Weekly, your number one source for luxury news. I'm your host, Simba Wakatama.
And I'm your host, Elizabeth Solaru.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Luxury News Weekly. We have exciting news for you. Let's start with today's top story. Okay, so now this is an interesting one because we've been watching this on our Clubhouse episodes when this took place. Burberry is appointing a new luxury goods expert, Jonathan Akeroyd from Versace, as their CEO. So for those who don't know, Burberry lost their CEO during the pandemic, and this was quite a huge deal because he was part of turning around the Burberry image, and they were kind of mid-strategy when he left to join an Italian brand. So Marco Gobetti was his name, and he decided to support an Italian company because he is Italian when he left Burberry. And this left them with a huge, huge, huge void. They did a bunch of campaigns to instill confidence with their consumers, and now they finally have a seasoned CEO. This guy has, Jonathan, he has been with Versace for over 10 years, and he has also been in Harrods in senior roles. He knows his stuff. This is exciting to see. What do you think, Elizabeth?
I think this is a fantastic hire. I think they've done very, very well to appoint him. I used to be a headhunter, and he would have been what I call an A-star candidate, because he definitely has the pedigree. He has turnaround experience, which is absolutely crucial. When he went to Alexander McQueen, they were not doing so well, but he did turn that around, which was fantastic. He has an amazing reputation, and he also says that he's looking forward to returning to London, where he first built his career in the luxury industry. And again, he's saying all the right things. And the fact that he's been appointed will actually be very good news to the shareholders of Burberry. And I believe that the share price actually rose very slightly. So again, being a British guy, British brand, I think he is a great, great hire.
Yeah, I'd have to agree, because we weren't sure they were going to find someone that would kind of instill the confidence they need, right? They were in a bit of a panic, and it was very last minute how their last CEO left. So I wasn't exactly sure that they were going to be recover from this, but it seems they found their footing, and Burberry's a fur away. Now we'll see, though, over time, because they're mid-strategy and they are immediately coming out of a pandemic. We'll see. China's going to tell a lot from this, because all the luxury brands are looking to the Chinese adoption to kind of stabilize their revenue. So we'll take a look at that now.
Yeah, just to jump in a little bit with this guy, I think he definitely can do it if he is allowed to. And I also think that to release him from Versace, they had to buy out his contract. I'm sure I read that somewhere. They had to buy they had to pay, because obviously to leave his previous post, he would have lost out in bonuses and shares. And so they had to pay extra for that. But I think it's definitely worth it. Burberry's, they've turned around the company once before, and I'm pretty sure they can do it again. So I'm actually full of confidence, and I hope, you know, I really, really wish Jonathan all the best.
Excellent. Yeah, that is very interesting. They would have to buy him out. They're almost like musicians at this stage, right? Where you have to pay for the entire contract. Now, some surprising news in the luxury fashion space as well. Balenciaga is officially the hottest luxury brand in the world right now. So according to the List Index, that's LYST Index, for the third quarter of 2021, Balenciaga comes out on top. This is apparently because of them being on the world headlines continuously. Now, just a little background. Remember how, now we've spoken about this for a long time, and Balenciaga is always on the top of conversation in our former clubhouse rooms because of one scandal or one crazy fashion show or one just very, very out there design or something. They're always there. Even their collaboration with Gucci, which was very good one way, and then the other, you know, the Gucci Balenciaga was good and the Balenciaga Gucci was horrible. But they're always in the headlines. So I'm not surprised that because they're spoken about, they are the number one. What do you think?
Yeah, interesting, because they've actually knocked Gucci off the top spot of the list. But I'm not surprised at all, because we loved Gucciaga. I remember Gucciaga. You know, Gucci did a really, really great job in challenging bits of Balenciaga, from what I remember. So we did actually like that, but we didn't really like it the other way around. And to be fair to Balenciaga, they kind of remind me of Pepsi, Coca-Cola situation, when the battle was really, really hot. And I remember Pepsi got a bunch of pop stars, you know, every name in the book. And they narrowly edged out Coke for a bit. And then eventually, you know, Coke came back. So congrats to Balenciaga. I really wish them well. But I do think that Gucci, you know, will definitely be looking to take back their crown. And it's also interesting to see that Dior came in at third place. And this followed the opening of the new Christian Dior Designer of Dreams exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum. And also Prada, Louis Vuitton, they claimed fourth and fifth spots on the list respectively. So the list is ever changing. It's very fluid. I just look forward to Gucci coming back with a vengeance.
Okay. Hot take. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
I hate this. I honestly hate this. Balenciaga, why? Why are you here? Why are you even in this conversation? Just get out, like leave the room for Dior and Louis Vuitton and Gucci. Like, good.
Oh, yeah, but remember though, it's not just about design, or, you know, it's not just about that. There are other factors that we need to take into consideration. We need to take, you know, like sheer audacity. We need to take into consideration different collaborations, you know, how much money was spent to really, really, you know, for them to really push themselves to the top. You know, the criteria, I'm pretty sure, is, but, you know, it's a quarterly listing. And yes, this is only for this quarter. So we don't know what's going to happen at the end of the year. So, you know, I have every confidence. And also, I'm pretty sure that Gucci are not exactly quaking in their boots anyway. And I'm sure Gucci has a lot up their sleeve. So let's watch this space.
Exactly. Now, the thing is, they say in this index, which is going to be very important, because I think we're going to watch this index and keep up to date with this particular index. It seems to be an important one, but they include Google searches, social media mentions, and engagement statistics over this quarter, so a 3-month period. Now, this can easily be skewed by like what I'm saying here. Good news and bad news. And Balenciaga has purposefully created controversy with their designs and their products. I remember the necklace, which was like an old phone line, a home phone line.
Oh, right? My God, that was dreadful. We hated that.
Yes,
oh,
but it went viral. God. It went viral. So this is skewing numbers. They're making it seem like this index shows the best and most bought brands. But also, let's remember, a big contribution to this is Kanye West releasing Donda, and the entire Balenciaga campaign he did for Donda. He was wearing full Balenciaga. And Kim Kardashian was wearing full Balenciaga. So this really skewed third quarter. I do not think they're going to be top three for the fourth quarter. And early next year, it'll probably go down. But they did a really good job. I will give them this. They did a really good job at staying in front of the news. Good for good. Or bad, for better or for worse.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. You know, when it comes to engagement, and this is what people don't understand, there is no such thing as good engagement or bad engagement. This is just engagement at the end of the day. So controversy sells. And remember, the whistleblower that spoke about the Facebook leak, she said that the number one emotion that drives engagement is anger. So when these brands do really outrageous things that people hate, what do? They take to social media to complain about it, to make videos about it. So it then breeds an industry by itself. So as far as I'm concerned, if you hate something, do not take to social media to complain about it. Just simply ignore it. Ignore. Do not give it any sort of engagement. But people, you know, our emotions get the better of us and we want to vent. And and it seems now that people think the best place to vent is social media. No, it is not. So even right now, we are talking about Balenciaga giving them further engagement. When
this is so true.
Them.
Yeah, this is so true. Yes. All right. So let's ignore them and move on, I guess. Hello, everybody. We are interrupting your episode to introduce ourselves. Who are the people behind Luxury News Weekly? Well, my name is Simbo Wakatama, and in my spare time, I am the CEO of Volo Bespoke. We personalize your jewelry storage solutions. That's right, folks. We make luxury jewelry storage that is not only beautiful, but works perfectly to integrate into your daily ritual.
Hi there, I'm your host, Elizabeth Solaru, and I'm based in London, England. I run two luxury companies. The first one is a luxury cake company, one of the best in the world, and the other is the Luxury Business Emporium, and I work with businesses who want to enter into the luxury space. I help with branding, coaching, and mentoring.
All right. Now, this is more towards the tech space, but still within the realm of luxury. So I don't know if you heard, but Sotheby's has opened a metaverse website where they'll be selling exclusively digital assets like NFTs and the like. Have you heard about this?
I saw something very briefly on Twitter. And the first thing that occurred to me was, oh my God, Sotheby's are being so smart, because they remember many, many months ago, we spoke about their involvement in this space because they were one of the first major auction houses to get into NFTs. And I think a Banksy was their first NFT, right? Am I correct?
I don't remember, but I remember them being the first, and I was just very surprised because they control, them and Christie's control the art market in general. So if they're doing it, they are kind of giving a huge bout of confidence, shall I say, to the entire NFT industry when it comes to the really big spenders.
Oh, absolutely. And they've always managed to attract the celebrities, the big names. And it makes sense anyway. Digital art is still art, still as valuable as physical art. And with the massive, massive move to the metaverse that we've seen from these art houses, we've seen it from many luxury brands. Why not? You know, it takes so much energy, materials, power, shop space, etc., to make physical products. why not create digital products instead? So yes, I'm not surprised at all, and huge congrats to Sotheby's.
Indeed. Now, the startup, okay, that is actually powering this website, they just raised $20 million in funding at a valuation of $100 million. So the startup is called Mojito, and they essentially create they create the metaverses in which these companies can then actually host their NFT sales or the digital asset sales. So it seems that they are getting that huge confidence from Sotheby's, of course, and raising capital to do more of this. If this becomes more of the norm, we can expect a, you know, Shopify style or you know, web what's that, Webflow and Squarespace. Yeah, Squarespace is a big one too. Wix, you know, but we can expect that kind of style company, but for NFTs, where you know, they make it really easy to sell your NFTs. Now, the real lack in this sector that I'm seeing right now is, like, you can imagine what art was like in the beginning, where, you know, the museum and the art gallery were made to specifically unify that universe of art and tell that story. With NFTs, there isn't that yet. And I would like to see something that then allows you to, you know, share more easily or what you own. And I think that's when, you know, that's when we're really talking metaverse, right? Where it's a universe, not right now, where it's just like meta objects.
Yeah, know? I think that's coming. I think, you know, remember, Sotheby's sold their first NFT in April. And up till a couple of years ago, NFTs were probably like a couple of million in sales a year. Now, you know, edging more than 100 million, 200 million, etc. So it's, you know, more than doubled, quadrupled, etc. I think that what would happen is there's got to be some sort of regulation, number one, that would come in. Some sort of law will come in. And then also there will be some sort of body that would maybe evaluate the, you know, art, et cetera, et cetera. But right now it's like the wild, wild west. You've got two or maybe three, four, five major online places where you can actually acquire NFTs. The first one is OpenSea. OpenSea is open for everybody. Literally, you can go and open an account and start selling your NFT tomorrow. It's that is that easy to do. But obviously, Sotheby's, they use another platform. Oh, I can't remember the name now, but they use another platform that's a, you know, a bit more exclusive. There's a selection criteria, and a lot of pop stars, celebrities, etc., they prefer that platform. So my point is, it's all coming. However, right now, there are people who are making a mint by just taking advantage of the fact that it's still new.
That's true. And there's a lot of money laundering as well, using NFTs, which I was, I mean, I kind of had an inkling people would do that, but I didn't realize how easy it is to do till very recently. And to not get into it, but just to give you how, just to give the audience how it's, how they do it, is essentially when you make money off of crypto, you owe capital gains taxes, right? If you collect on that, if you cash out on that money. So what you do is, you will cash out your money, and then you will purchase, an NFT, right? And you purchase that NFT for, a lot of money, the most you can. Basically, you'll try to use all your profits to purchase that NFT. And then you'll create a separate crypto account, which is a private crypto account. And then you'll sell your NFT to yourself for less than you bought it for. So if you bought it for 100 grand, sell it to yourself for 50 grand. And now you've got a capital gains loss of 50 grand. So you don't owe that in taxes anymore because capital gains accounts for your losses and your gains. But the NFT is still growing in value because you know you can always sell it to someone else. And so that's exactly what you do. You sell it to someone else down the line on your private account and, you know, cash in with that money. People have been doing this with art, but it was way harder to do. So you can't really, only the wealthiest companies and people in the world could do it. But with NFTs, really anyone can do it.
That, I mean, it goes, just goes to show that, you know, decentralization is really working. And yes, just in case anyone's listening, I have an NFT. It's for sale. It's $1 million. So if anybody wants to buy it,
yes,
do hit me up. And with my NFT, you get a physical product as well. So, yeah, just thought I'd throw that in there.
100%. And where can people find this NFT?
Ah, my NFT is on OpenSea. It's on OpenSea. It's a cake NFT, and it's essentially a huge, huge cake, a 7-8 tier cake. And you'll actually get a physical cake. I'll fly to anywhere in the world, recreate the cake for you. So you get a digital version as well as a physical version. And it's actually ideal for anyone who's throwing a, you know, maybe $1 million wedding or something. You know, it's a cool thing to have. So just, you know, hit me up. You know, you can find us at the end of this program. You know, you'll find us. We'll leave our details and hit me up. And yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. So now we have probably one of the longest cruises you could ever take in your life. This is a cruise around the world. We're talking 7 continents in 274 days. That's correct. Royal Caribbean is introducing the Ultimate World Cruise. Over 150 destinations, okay, in 65 countries, starting in 2023. This is just ridiculous. If you have a year that you need to fill with something, this is for you, okay? This cruise will take you to some very popular destinations, including Casablanca in Morocco, or Qaqortoq in Greenland, or Shimizu, Japan. Now, I don't know who this is for, but I'm assuming it's for retirees, because who has a year to cruise? What do you think?
Actually, I know that a lot of people tend to think that cruises are for older people, which they are. However, think about it. If you can work from anywhere in the world, if you have a job or a business that you can run from anywhere in the world and you have the money, I'm actually thinking of an idea that I'm sure I saw this on a program once where a lady, fairly young, she took some of her money and rather than pay rent and bills, et cetera, she took her the money that she would have paid for rent, et cetera. She took it and went on a cruise. And she didn't have to pay, you know, for bills. She didn't have to commute. And she literally just worked while she was on a cruise. So she was working, having the time of her life. She didn't worry, have to worry about food. She had an amazing social life. And she kind of did that as a social experiment. So I'm kind of thinking for people who are into their travel, so for your travel bloggers, for example, for people who absolutely run, I don't know, online companies, et cetera, this could actually be ideal. But I do get that the target market is probably really rich retirees who just want to travel, who want to see the world, who maybe worked all their lives and haven't been able to do it. This is a fantastic way to do it. My only worry, and again, I'm speaking here as an ex-microbiologist, is with cruises, once you have, you know, things like COVID or the norovirus, you know, there are things that I think about when I think about cruises, because if one person gets it, you all get it.
Yeah.
So that would be my only worry. Although, you know, of course it can happen anywhere, but I'm kind of thinking, you know, a boat that big, that huge, However, I can't think of, a nicer way to see all seven continents. And to be fair, the Royal Caribbean International, they've been running for more than 50 years. So by now, they probably know what they're doing. And I'm pretty sure that they will pull out all the stops to make this the jewel in their crown.
Oh, yeah. They are a really good cruise line, actually. And they do cater more so to retirees. But that's kind of the nature of the cruise industry. And of course, like you said, some people actually own timeshares in these cruises. So on these cruise ships, so they actually own the suites they're staying in and they live there. Now, this will start at $124,000 per person. And you can actually reserve your cruise for 2023 by phone. That alone tells you that this is catered towards the older generation. Because who's booking reservations by phone?
But you never know. All our recent crypto millionaires and the NFT millionaires, they might, book. And I know, but then when you think about booking by phone, you can do it via Apple Pay from your phone, So don't look down on booking by phone. Don't look down. Because you never know. You never know. You can book through Apple Watch, et cetera, et cetera. And talking about the fee, $124,000, or was it pounds or dollars?
It's dollars, yeah.
Dollars.
American.
I actually thought it was going to be a lot more expensive than that.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually, I mean, I could be wrong, a luxury cruise that lasts, I don't know, a couple of weeks or something, doesn't that run into about 10 grand?
Yes, it does.
So if we think about it, and if you're going to be spending 274 days.
It's a lot.
That is a lot of days. So for 124,000, that is, when you look at, when you break it down, it's actually not bad.
No.
Although, obviously it's enough money to buy a house. But
yes, but it's only a couple hundred a day. It's like 300 a day or something like that. It's not that much as far as vacations go, because you're spending. Imagine when you go on vacation, you're spending hundreds, if not thousands, every day because it's a short time. So this actually becomes a lot more economical on a cost per day basis.
Absolutely. And that's, so I was a bit surprised. It wasn't more expensive, but I suppose it could start at that. But by the time you add the extras, dinner with the captain, fancy dresses, activities, excursions, this and that and the other, you could easily double that amount, I suppose.
And let's not forget the tips that you're going to have to be doing for the entire year.
Exactly, because you do have to tip the crew really, really well.
Yes.
So when you add everything, you could easily double. And if Royal Caribbean are listening, I'm happy to test drive. I'm happy to review.
We will have to do it. It's in their best interest that we do it before they get bad reviews or something. We will figure it out. We'll get to the bottom of it.
Oh, absolutely. So, yes, we're open to sponsorship.
Yes, certainly. Now, speaking of cruises are known for their food and, of course, the free-flowing alcohol. But the food, now, you're not going to have luxury food without truffles. And it turns out we are running out of truffles right now. We have a shortage of white truffles, and that's putting the price up to $4,500 a pound. Sheesh.
Wow. All right.
Now, I'm not a humongous truffle fan. I don't mind the taste. I'm not particularly inclined to it or against it. It's just, if it's there, I'll eat it. But truffle fans are diehard fans, and they will pay whatever it takes to get a good truffle. Do you like truffles, Elizabeth?
It really depends. If it's overdone, it makes me queasy. It really, really makes me queasy. But I do like truffle shavings, and I do like proper truffles, because sometimes you have the fake, horrible truffle oil, which is, you can tell it's, you can tell it's not the real stuff. So that really, really makes me queasy. But truffle shavings, lightly done, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I'm not surprised there's a shortage at all. I am not at all surprised, because we had been warned about this actually a few years ago by the truffle farms, because it is a natural ingredient. And because I remember many, many years ago, they used to use pigs. And then I don't know if they still use pigs. I think they tried using sniffer dogs at one point. So I'm not surprised at all that there is a shortage. However, this is an opportunity maybe to grow truffles artificially. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm so surprised they don't grow truffles. Maybe they do, but I wouldn't know about it, because it's a fungus. Certainly they can grow it in a lab or a controlled environment and mass produce it. Now, I can understand if wild truffles end up being more expensive, but I don't really see why. And this is with my limited research, that they don't just grow this stuff. You know, we grow every other kind of mushroom in a lab or in a farm style, because we know that's kind of the only way we're going to get enough. I don't know what it is. Does it just take a long time to grow? Like, I don't understand.
Well, the thing is, though, you know that truffles are very native to Italy. So they grow in the forests of Italy and in the Balkan Peninsula. And it's actually been recently, very, very recently, that, and this was a global first, that they've managed to actually grow the gourmet truffle outside their natural habitat. So I am pretty sure that, and apparently they grew them in America, regions of Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. So the temperature has got to be quite temperate, you know, the temperate regions. So, so I'm pretty sure people are researching and finding ways to grow truffles as we speak. But like you said, there is something about wild, natural wild truffle. And also we need to think of something else. Just like champagne was registered so that you can only get champagne from a region in France called Reims.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure maybe they have a mark for truffles as well. We need to find that out. So if that's the case, even if you grow truffles outside of those regions in Italy and the Balkans, you might not be able to call it truffle.
Yes. And this is going to be either, like you said, like the sparkling wine wars, which is again champagne versus everyone else, or the cheese wars, where you have like Parmesan. You can't just call it Parmesan if it's not from a particular place. You have to spell it differently or mention that. And the truffle war would be even maybe like the diamond war right now, lab grown versus natural diamonds. If people can actually mass produce these truffles, that'll severely impact the price. Now, it'll either make the price of wild truffles go up, because now it's even more special, or it'll just plummet the price.
Exactly. But I think, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I read it somewhere that definitely for black truffles, there are orchards actually that grow black truffles. And apparently two French scientists turned entrepreneurs, they found a way to grow truffles. So, we'll do a bit more research and, and look into that. But I'm pretty sure that we will definitely have that situation that you just described.
Yes. Now, we have seen a lot of luxury brands bring on new talent in the form of ambassadors. Today, we see Dior introducing Emma Raducanu. Now, she's a tennis player, kind of overnight rising to the top, right? And she actually went to the fourth round at Wimbledon this summer, and she actually had a really good performance at the U.S. Open and took home the top trophy in a record-breaking win. So now, after working with a couple of companies, including Tiffany & Co., she has actually become the new face of Dior. Now, I don't think she's the main face of Dior, but that's certainly a huge accolade, especially in the world of sports. Dior has really been embracing musicians and sports people, but usually they used to just, represent celebrities, right, in the movie world. So this is an interesting change of pace.
Yeah, I like Emma. I think this is the thing with Dior. They know how to choose the best Gen Zs as their ambassadors. So they really go for really, you know, sort of like, for lack of a better word, really classy, obviously beautiful role models who have a history of achievement behind them. With Emma, she became an overnight sensation here in the UK. Very, very proud of her. Everybody now wants a piece of her. But what I remember her for was that she went through a situation where she had to withdraw from a game due to mental health reasons. And I remember that a footballer called Marcus Rashford, he's a very promising, really lovely young man, reached out to her. So she withdrew, and there was a horrible, horrible, and I'm not going to mention his name, horrible reporter that called her woke and weak and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then she went away, got her head together, went to the US Open and did really, really well. So obviously she's now the darling of everyone in the UK right now. But I love the fact that she's only 18. She's literally just done her A-levels. She is taking everything in her stride. You know, beautiful young lady with a sensible head on her shoulders. And I love the collaboration with Dior, because Dior, again, a brand that really, really looks after, they really look after their brand ambassadors. So, you know, very happy for her. And yeah. Looking forward to whatever she chooses to do in the future.
Yes, actually, that sounds very similar to Naomi Osaka and what she went through as well. These tennis players are very much celebrities. And we all know, I think like a lot of sports, unlike a lot of sports, actually, you can't hide behind a team. You can't hide behind a coach. You can't hide behind a league. You are the star, you are the team, you are the, you know, everything. And so I think we're seeing with a lot of Gen Z in the tennis world that they are being more open because of social media, and people aren't used to that, right? Especially in the world of sports. And you say, well, how can you mix kind of these very private matters with sports? But the thing is, other teams can rely on each other, other players, etc. If you're a tennis player, you play by yourself. You know, you are the team. So it's a very interesting role they find themselves in.
Oh, absolutely. And I, for one, I'm very happy that Gen Zs and, you know, hopefully alphas coming after them are being very open about their mental health struggles. Because sometimes they need to let people know that not everything that glitters is gold. And sport is, it's about physical, it's physical. However, it's just as much about mental preparation as well and being mentally fit. And I'm very, very happy that there, you know, people are now speaking about out about mental health issues, being very open, people talking more about it, and people being willing not to sacrifice their mental health for a trophy.
Yes, this is true. Now, speaking of trophies, if you have a couple of $1 million to spare, you might be the lucky owner of a California license plate reading the two letters MM. Now, this license plate is currently up for sale for $24.3 million. And you also get an NFT, which matches. That's great. Okay. What's your take on this?
Well, I'm not into number plates, but I know a couple of people that are. And I know someone who spent six figures on a license plate, because I don't know his initials plus the 007 or whatever. So for people who are into it and who are collectors, they might think it's worth the price tag. I don't know who's auctioning it. Is it going to be an auction or something? Apparently, the MM license plate is currently available for purchase on OpenSea. So remember I spoke about OpenSea?
Yes.
Being one of the platforms for NFTs. And it's on sale for 5,888 Ether, which is the equivalent of 24.3 million. So you're not just buying the plate, but you're buying an NFT, yada, yada, yada. Now, this is the thing. When I saw MM, I thought of Meghan Markle. I thought of Meghan Markle. And I thought, imagine, you know, if you're, you know, a super fan of hers, actually buying her that license plate. And she lives in California, doesn't she? So imagine, the British press will go crazy. They will go mad, you know, if somebody actually bought that for her. But that's a different subject. So, yeah, when I saw MM, I thought, oh, my God, you know, maybe it's a sign. But for me, I don't know why people spend that much money on a license plate. But for people who are into it, it means a lot to them. What do you think?
Well, it really does. I think this is a bit bogus. But I know in Dubai, for instance, right? And this kind of goes for the UAE in general, but in Dubai in particular, the number of your license plates literally is your social ranking. So the number one is always reserved for royalty. And then it ascends from there. And there'll be letters associated and numbers. So it might be like A and then 1, 2. I don't know how high it really goes. And then B, C, D. So depending if you're, you know, A1, that type of thing, that's reserved for the, you know, crown king, and et cetera. Now, that's the most expensive. Belongs to a Abu Dhabi, I'm assuming a sheikh, and that would be the number one for 14.3 million in 2009, right? Wow. But they actually have laws. They have laws protecting the top license plates. And it actually is kind of smart because when you see very high ranking license plates, on the road, you know, to give them way. The police know not to stop them, et cetera, et cetera, right? So it is quite an interesting social system. Now, take it back to California. Who cares? Like, who cares? I don't know. I don't know. It's, I don't get it.
You know what, though? Good luck to them. It's their money. If they choose to spend it that way, then, you know, good luck to them. But yeah.
Yeah, good luck. It's an absorbent amount of money. It's for life to pay. And then I love how they just justify it with an NFT as well. So someone could easily buy it and, like we mentioned before, launder money doing it, right? So that license plate is $24 million, but it really is saving them $24 million if you think about it that way.
True. That's true. That is true. That is true.
Yes. Now, speaking of feats of design, we have an upside down skyscraper that's supposed to be built in Manhattan by Sir David Ajaye? Is it Ajaye?
Ajaye. I think he's Ghanaian from what I remember. I think he's British and I think he's Ghanaian from what I remember. I remember that in the UK, he's known for, I mean, he first came to prominence when he designed a bus stop, actually. It was a bus stop. But really? He designed a bus stop, I think in Stratford, which is the East End part of London. And it was such a stunning, I remember it being so stunning. And this was many, many, many years ago. And as a person of color, it was just so, it was just beautifully designed and executed. And since then, he just sort of like came into prominence. And he's done other designs. So I'm not surprised at all that he's conceived of an upside down tower. And it looks pretty cool to me. So what do you think?
Well, I'm looking up his previous work. And apparently he's famous for his kind of rule breaking style. I see a lot of African influence on the designs and Arab influence too, actually, if I'm to be completely honest here. But I love his work. These are very interesting buildings, very interesting concepts. Like, I don't necessarily follow architecture that closely, although I have a couple of architects that I really enjoy following their life and their work. I'm more interested in the design process, of course, being a product designer myself. But this is amazing. This guy is really cool. Now, this building is literally an upside down condominium. It is crazy. And it's a skyscraper. I bet engineers hate him. Hate his guts. I can just see civil engineers like, every time he gets praised, they get PTSD, from having to build these crazy concepts. This is, take a skyscraper and an interesting one at that, and then put it upside down. It's so amazing. I love it. This is what I want to see. Now, we are in the future now. We need to switch it up a bit,
Oh, absolutely. We're talking 2021 now, so why not? And of course, it would be nice to know if he considers things like sustainability, maybe using sustainable materials, how the workers are treated, et cetera, things like solar panels. And because there have been buildings, skyscrapers built, and their reflection has actually melted cars, et cetera, et cetera. So things like that need to be considered, impact on the environment, et cetera, et cetera. So not just the concept, but there are other things as well that will need to be considered. So, yeah, I do like the name of the building. It's called the Affirmation Tower. Mm-hmm. So for me, will there be affirmations written all over the building? Would when you walk into the building, maybe somebody will be reciting affirmations at you. I don't know.
Imagine 2 a.m. you're walking in from a night out and someone's like, you're the best. You can do
exactly.
This.
So, but who knows? Who knows? But yeah, I love the idea. It's very exciting. Nice concept, but let's see how we go from there.
Yes, and I'm very curious of what the interior is going to look like, because his previous work has beautiful interiors, and the experience of his previous works extend from the inside looking out, you also get an interesting perspective. So this thing towers 1,633 feet. Very, very tall building. All right. So interesting, interesting. Now, to wrap it up for this week, we have a NFT surprise. There's a lot of NFT news in recent luxury space. So don't be surprised. This is not going to stop happening, right? So we have a visual artist. They've been using an algorithm to make multi-million dollar NFTs. So Tyler Hobbs is partnering with Bright Moments for this NFT minting experience. And for those who are not familiar with what minting is basically the creation of NFTs. So you can think of it like the exhibit where an artist would finally release their artwork for sale. That's essentially what minting is in that respect. So how much will this thing cost? Well, I don't know. But Hobbs lost the tulip, was the name of the artwork, sold for $3.3 million.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Whoa.
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of how if you want to be a musician and you perform, right? You get paid for your performance. But then when records and CDs were popular, someone buys your performance for a fraction of the cost and you don't even have to be there, right? So it adds up to a lot more money. And this is what we're seeing with art now. These NFTs are artificially rare. So you can make multiple and you can just mint this money without necessarily having to make more unique pieces, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole point of NFTs, though, because each NFT is meant to be unique anyway. So it's one of a kind. And then you can actually make it even more rarer by building into the blockchain, because NFTs are held on the blockchain.
Yes.
So you then design what we call a smart contract. And sometimes when you design that contract, only someone who actually pays for the NFT is able to unlock that part of the contract. So in that contract, you can actually hide some surprises. So with me, as part of my contract, I actually put some things into the contract for my cake NFT as well. So yes, you're getting the cake, but you're getting this and you're getting that and you're getting that. So there's that side of things as well. But what I find interesting with Tyler is that his event is going to take place in two stages. So the first stage, attendees will buy a golden token. So it's like a Willy Wonka and the, golden ticket. So these golden tokens will be distributed via a Dutch auction in which the price of an item, it reduces until it is bought, right? So you know that the Dutch auction is like what happens in the flower market, right? Because in the flower market, you start bidding for flowers at a very, very high price. And because flowers deteriorate, the prices of flowers will drop as it drops over time, because obviously flowers are dying. So however, if it's around, say, Valentine's Day or something like that, some people will go in at very high price anyway. They don't even bother waiting because they know they can sell. They will always sell the flowers around Valentine, etc. So he's doing the golden ticket thing. He's doing the Dutch auction thing. And then he's also choosing to limit the mintings. He's only going to focus on 100 mints. So he can go deep into the work and make them as unique and well-crafted as possible. So it's basically a lot of words for saying, I'm only making 100 limited pieces, get them now, before they run out kind of thing. So yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. And, the thing is, So I know a thing or two on the technical side. When people say algorithms and whatnot, it can either be a very complex process or a very simple process. So when this artist is using, in this particular artwork, algorithms to create the art, this person could be spending 10 minutes. Okay?
Exactly.
10 minutes to make a couple million dollars. Now, of course, with art, it's not necessarily how long it takes you for you to make it. It's a lot of the concept behind it and whatnot. But there's no real... you can always make... With NFTs, you can always make the concept after you made the thing. You get what I'm saying?
Of course.
Like you can give it meaning afterwards. Like, for instance, with the last work, The Tulip, of course, the algorithm will spit out even millions of different variations, right? And you'll pick. Now, this one looks like a tulip. So, of course, you can easily create the concept and say, no, well, this is the tulip, right? After the fact. So I am not yet confident in the space as far as a pure art perspective, fine art perspective, but I really, really love the creativity that's coming out of this space and the rule breaking that's coming out of this space.
Exactly. I think for me, I also love the business opportunity, because if you think about it, anyone can create an NFT.
Yes.
And anyone can sell an NFT. And it doesn't have to be a physical product. It's all digital. So that means an NFT can be anything, a piece of writing, an email, a note that somebody sent you, your old report card. An NFT can be anything. The most important thing about NFT is the market. Is there a market for what you've created? And is somebody going to buy what you've created? That is it. So yes, for me, I love the rule breaking. I love the opportunity. And I love the business behind NFTs.
Absolutely. Now that brings us to the end of our program. Let me give a quick summary of what we've spoken about today. And for next time, you can find us on every major platform that podcasts are found. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. Search Simba Wakatama on Instagram. Easy to find. And for Elizabeth, search?
Search Elizabeth Solaru or Elizabeth's Cake Emporium or the Luxury Business Emporium.
Of course. And we will definitely leave all that information in the show notes. These have been your stories for this week. First, Burberry appoints a new CEO, the former CEO of Versace. Then we had the Sotheby's Metaverse has been powered by a company that creates digital experiences for these platforms called Mojito. They just raised $20 million. And Balenciaga has shown up as the top brand for the third quarter on the List Index, meaning they have been the most talked about digital brand. Now, after that, we have the Royal Caribbean cruise ship, which is going to take you to 7 continents in 274 days. So if you've got a year to cruise around, this is it. It's going to cost you around $124,000 or more. Then we have a white truffle shortage. So these truffles are going for around $4,500 a pound. Good luck finding those. Next, Emma Raducanu has become the new Dior ambassador. She is a trailblazing tennis player, quite new to the scene. We wish her the best. Also, for $24 million, you can get the MM California license plate. And of course, an NFT to match. Also, we have an upside down skyscraper by architect David Ajaye. And this is really crazy. It is literally a upside down condominium. quite crazy. It is called the Affirmation Tower. And we also have the last thing we spoke about, which is the NFT that uses algorithms by Taylor Hobbs. This is quite interesting. The Last Tulip was the name of it, sold for $3.3 million by the same artist. So this one is expected to sell for somewhere around that price or more. And these have been your top stories for this week.
Fantastic. I am so glad that we were able to bring you the stories for this week. Tune in again next week for more Luxury News Weekly. Thank you and goodbye.